Talking Business on Radio Q. Joining me now is Mukund Narayanamurthy, who's the CEO of AsiaLink Business. I did okay with your name, didn't I, Mukund?
Absolutely, Alan. Thank you for having me on the show.
No, it's a pleasure, and thanks for joining us. Now, you and PwC and the Australian Institute of Management have just released a report on Australia's on the readiness of Australian businesses to deal with Asia. And one of the interesting things about it was you scored the ASX 200 companies out of 30. And the average score was 6.42. That's terrible. What's going on?
That's right, Alan. So it was 6.42 for boards, and it was even lower for senior executives. It was about 3.79 was the average score out of 30. So it was quite concerning.
I thought it would have been higher for executives, not and lower for the boards.
Well, that was one of the very interesting findings in the report that looked at the ASX 200. And it was the opposite, though, when we looked at a comparative group of the top 30 private companies. So your suggestion is absolutely spot on in the context of the private companies. But with the ASX top 200, boards scored better than senior executives, which is very interesting.
Well, you also found that the boards were basically an Asian desert in terms of the number of Asian people or people who knew about Asia on the boards themselves.
That's right. The report focuses on Asia capabilities in our boards and senior executive teams in the top 200 listed companies in Australia. And so it looks at the skills, the knowledge, and the experience that 100% of the population of board members and senior executives, not just those that are Asian identifying, have. Because from our perspective, this ability to evaluate opportunities in Asia and do business with the region is a responsibility for all members of a board and senior executive team if they are to assure their organizations of long-term growth and sustainability. So it can't just be the responsibility of only Asian identifying board members and executives.
Of course. That makes complete sense. And in fact, particularly for those companies that are trying to do business in Asia, which would you say is most of them? That most companies in Australia should be trying to do business and should be prepared to do business in Asia?
Absolutely. And I think that if they choose not to do business with Asia, it should be the result of some deeply considered evaluation, which should give rise to some very specific reasons why they choose not to do so. But if that is not the case, then we would very much like to see more businesses from Australia, particularly at the top end of town, because they're unicorns for the rest of the country, looking to do business with the region.
But I suppose the broad finding of your study is that Australian companies are unprepared to do that.
That's absolutely right. They're unprepared to do that. And for us, it was really almost the second part in a key journey that we feel that our large businesses need to take. The first part was just recognizing the macro trends around Asia's growth and Asia's almost reemergence. And the fact that actually, Alan, Australia does do a lot with the region, but it's largely trade-based. So 7 out of our top 10 export destinations are in Asia, so 60% of our trade is with the region. But when we actually look at investment, where we actually put dollars into a market, that still remains largely in the US, in the UK, and New Zealand. We invest more in New Zealand today than we do in all of the countries in Southeast Asia combined, and we invest the same amount in China as we do in P&G, for instance. So while we trade a tremendous amount of China, and China is by far our biggest trading partner, when it comes to actually investing and setting up a presence on the ground to be close to Chinese customers in services and financial services and healthcare, in those areas in which you can't really just put the commodities, in a shipping crate and ship them off, but you actually need to have a presence close to the end customer, we're not quite as good.
So how long has AsiaLink Business been around?
4 years.
Right. So just getting going, really.
We are.
Work to do.
But our parent AsiaLink has been around for 27 years.
Right.
And so AsiaLink did very important work over the last 27 years across a number of areas, including in supporting business, and AsiaLink Business is taking that important
but
work
given
forward.
But given the results of your study, you'd have to say they haven't actually succeeded.
So we have a responsibility for the whole workforce, Alan. So this report focuses on the ASX 200. But our mandate from the federal government, which is actually our major stakeholder for AsiaLink Business, is for the entire workforce. So we're focused on small and medium-sized businesses where actually there's a tremendous amount of dynamism and engagement with universities, which engage extensively with the region, with federal, state, local, and regional governments, and then the wider not-for-profit sector. So in many ways, actually, the top end of town, and particularly our listed companies, are a lot more risk-averse than other parts of our society.
So I noticed that Mike Smith, the former CEO of ANZ, blamed institutional investors and their risk aversion for this, what you've just identified. Do you agree with that?
I think that there's a responsibility at multiple levels, is what the report says. There's a responsibility at the senior executive level. There's a responsibility at the board level. And then, of course, there's a responsibility of our capital markets, including our institutional investors and also the analyst community, to ensure that organizations that invest in the region aren't too harshly judged in the short term, but are given the opportunity in the long term to enable strategies for growth to actually be achieved.
But the fact is that doing business in Asia is risky, isn't it? It's kind of risky. Well, certainly riskier than just doing business in Australia.
Well, that's a very interesting comment, Alan. I think that every country has sovereign risk. And I think that if you were to speak to Asian investors, I think you'll hear a very interesting view about the risks of doing business in Australia. And we certainly hear that. So I think that it's just that the nature of risk is different because the structure of those markets is different. It is different to Australia. I wouldn't necessarily say it's more risky. It just requires a different lens, a non-Western lens of looking at those markets.
Do you think, I'll be interested to get into what those differences are in a moment, but do you think that if you did the same sort of survey in among Asian businesses of their readiness and preparedness to do business in Australia, you'd get the similar result?
Possibly.
Because they don't know Australia and they don't understand it and they find it risky. As you just pointed out, it is risky for them to do business in Australia.
Absolutely right. But we are seeing increasing levels of investment from Asia into Australia. So they are still choosing, despite the risks the history of investing here, they're choosing to make investments here. And we'd like to see that same entrepreneurial spirit from the Australian side in investing in the region.
So what would you say is the main difference for Australian companies dealing in Asia that they find difficult?
There are a number of differences, Alan. We have 11-point framework where we have six key capabilities on the individual side and five organizational capabilities, which are essential to succeed. But if I were to pick one thing out, it would be this absolute aversion to negotiating. In Asia,
the Australians have.
On the Australian side. If you just think of it at a really practical level, in markets in Asia, if you think of India or markets in Southeast Asia, you negotiate over everything. You negotiate on the taxi ride in to work. You negotiate your restaurant bills. You negotiate around the price of any vegetable that you purchase in any market. There is no fixed price for anything. Everything is up for negotiation. So when you put yourself in the shoes of an Indian businessman or a businessman from another part of the region, when they come to the negotiating table on a multi-million dollar or multi-billion dollar deal, everything's up for negotiation. We, on the other hand, here in Australia, negotiate very little. We actually don't recognize that because the price of most goods and services is actually regulated and fixed. So when we get to a negotiating table on a business deal, we believe that if we can, through reason and logic, show that the price has been determined for a particular commodity or service on a totally rational basis on economic terms, then the counterparty should just accept that because we have been rational and logical. And therefore, there should be a deal that's done. Doesn't work like that in Asia. And that's where we find that the process of actually doing something with counterparties in the region can take a long period of time, because it takes time to build trust and it takes time to conclude deals, and the starting position of often in mindset is very different.
So you don't need trust to negotiate, do you? You just negotiate, right?
Well, you need trust through the process to conclude a negotiation and then to sustain the relationship so that both parties actually respect the terms of what's actually been negotiated.
And the result of the negotiation, I guess that's right.
Absolutely right.
And yeah. And you often hear about Asia requires, Asian doing business in Asia requires long-term relationships rather than, and you have to be patient. Is that true?
Well, that's absolutely true. But I think that's also increasingly becoming the case in Australia as well, where historically it was the case in Australia that you did a business deal and then after you did a series of business deals, you became friends. Whereas in Asia, often if you were to generalize across markets, people first want to get to know you at a social level, feel like they can trust you, and then they might do business with you. I think since the global financial crisis, the relevance of relationships has become incredibly relevant, even in Australia, and also the structure of our market has changed, the demographic structure. So we have a lot more Asian businesses in Australia as well. So I'd say that's also now the case in Australia.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you, Alan. Thanks for having me.
I've been talking to Mukund Narayana Murthy, CEO of AsiaLink Business.
Thank you, Alan.